Good evening. Welcome to Council Connection for August. I'm your host, Steve Dresser. It's hard to believe, but the humidity around here is finally broken. That was a killer of a heat wave last week. Fortunately for me, I had air conditioning to keep me in comfort and coolness. I hope the rest of you were as lucky as I was. In any event, it's over, and we have lots to do this month. We'll hear some good stories. We'll have an interview with Dan Spoon, new president of ACB. And we'll start with Kim Charlson giving her final report as ACB president at the ACB National Conference and Convention in Rochester, New York, on July 6th of this year.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's now time for me to present to you my report to the convention. It's been a true honor for me to come before you again for my sixth and final report as president of the American Council of the Blind. The time has truly sped by for me as I look back over the past 6 years. I have several updates to provide, but I do want to reserve much of my report to give some observations, impressions, and thank yous to so many people who made my term as president so productive and, I believe, very successful. 7 years ago, I made a commitment to the membership of ACB that I would step forward to run as president in 2013. It is a decision that no one who makes that important commitment takes on lightly. Once such a decision was made, I knew it was one that I had to stay totally focused on, no matter what else came along. We never know what kinds of obstacles, roadblocks, or opportunities will be placed in our path as we move ahead, and that was the case for me. Just 3 months before the 2013 ACB convention in Columbus, I was diagnosed with stage 1 breast cancer. I was so fortunate that it was detected very early, and I was placed on a treatment schedule that was very successful with very few side effects. I was committed to move ahead for ACB, and in fact, I believe that having that focus helped me to successfully complete my treatment. Now, just 2 months ago, I received the totally cancer-free diagnosis from my oncologist. Such great news to hear. And back then, I didn't let that cancer obstacle get in my way. I used it as my motivation to move ahead. It continues to be a pleasure for me to work with our incredible staff, both past and present, who get much of the organization's work done on a day-to-day basis. One significant moment I view as a major change point for ACB was the hiring of Eric Bridges as our executive director. Some questioned the hiring of such a young man to lead our organization, but I've never doubted Eric or his innate sense of what will work for ACB and his management style. He has good instincts and has brought on board a team of young, enthusiastic professionals who work hard and believe in ACB and what we stand for. Now I can honestly say ACB and our staff are highly regarded and admired in the cross-disability community, and Eric's key relationships, input, and guidance are sought after from both government and industry alike. Thank you to that dedicated team Eric has pulled together. In our Minnesota office, we rely on Nancy Becker, Nicole Beto, Lane Waters, Nancy Christine Fila, and our new staff member, Cindy Van Winkle. They keep the business wheels of ACB turning smoothly. And in our Alexandria, Virginia headquarters office, working directly with Eric, we are fortunate to have Kelly Gask, Sharon Levering, Claire Stanley, and Clark Rockfell, who stepped into the large shoes left empty by Tony Stevens, who we sure do miss, but Clark has not missed a step in those shoes, handling our advocacy and governmental affairs efforts every day. Thank you to all of you. Working alongside our strong staff are several contractors that do specific work for ACB in a variety of areas. Tom Tobin is our Director of Development. Jolynn Bailey Page is our grant writer. Joel Snyder is the Director of ACB's Audio Description Project. And Larry Turnbull is Managing Director of ACB Radio. Hello out there on ACB Radio. Thanks to our contractors for all their efforts. I want to recognize and thank the members of the ACB Board of Directors and the members of the ACB Board of Publications collectively over the past 6 years for making my term as president so productive, collegial, and collaborative. Without all of you and your contributions, ACB would not be where it is today. Now to speak of the current board. First, I want to take a moment of personal privilege to recognize the support I have received from our immediate past president, Mitch Pomerantz. Mitch, 6 months ago, you gave us all a pretty big scare with a major medical issue, and we weren't sure we would be able to see you at this convention. I would like for you to please stand and be recognized by all of us for your stubbornness, your determination, and your overall curmudgeonliness, which are all the traits that made you recover so successfully. Those traits are what we've come to know you and respect you for every day. Mitch, thank you, and glad that you're here with us for ACB. As for the rest of the board, thank you to all of you for your service. At the close of this convention, one officer, John McCann, will be stepping down from the board to dedicate his time and efforts to serving his local Arizona affiliate. Thank you, John, for your service to ACB. I also want to recognize another Arizonan who is a leader who is terming out constitutionally, and that's Ron Brooks, who has been serving as chair of the Board of Publications. Ron has been on the BOP for the last 6 years, the last four as the chair, and he has done a tremendous job tackling some very challenging issues and bringing consensus and collaboration to bear to make the decision-making process as inclusive as possible. Ron, thank you for your service, and I am definitely expecting to see more from you on behalf of ACB in the future. I also want to acknowledge Ray Campbell for his service as secretary. He did a tremendous job, and he and I joke often that we each broke the glass ceiling. Me for being the first woman president of ACB, and Ray for being the first male secretary in either a long time or possibly ever to serve ACB. Ray, it was an honor to work with you.
Thank you.
Now for some updates. In late 2018, ACB worked with Hulu to become the latest streaming service to commit to accessibility for viewers who are blind or visually impaired. That's okay to clap. Yay, it was a good thing. Thank you. ACB worked with the Bay State Council of the Blind, and we reached a settlement agreement to increase the accessibility of Hulu's streaming service to individuals who are blind or have low vision. As a result, Hulu is now undertaking efforts to make its website and software applications accessible via screen readers and is working to provide audio description tracks for its streaming content wherever possible. With these efforts, Hulu joins such services as Netflix, iTunes, and Amazon's Prime Video, which are providing audio description for their programming and making the entertainment industry more aware and accessible to the blind community. Hulu has already started adding audio-described content on their website to over 38 programs and series. They have the remainder of this year to bring their app and website into compliance with current web accessibility guidelines and to continue adding audio-described content moving forward. I want to thank disability rights advocates and the Disability Law Center of Boston, who represented ACB and BSCB respectively in this case. On February 8th, 2019, the diplomatic papers of the Marrakesh Treaty for the Visually Impaired were delivered to the World Intellectual Property Organization in Geneva, Switzerland. Following the 90-day waiting period, on May 8th, the United States became the 50th nation to officially be recognized as a member nation of the Marrakesh Treaty. This was a great advocacy moment for all of the blindness organizations and represented tremendous collaboration among all blindness organizations, the library community, and the publishing industry. The path ahead for Marrakesh does have some challenges for U.S. entities, but libraries are working to overcome those obstacles, and you will hear more about those efforts this week from NLS and LUA presenters. Over the past 3 years, through hard work by both ACB staff and volunteers, ACB has continued to balance its budget and has even produced a small surplus. As a result, ACB has stabilized financially, keeps growing its revenue streams, and has established a legacy endowment fund. This is a tremendous accomplishment for everyone supporting ACB and its fundraising efforts. You're all to be commended. A revised endowment policy was approved by the board, ACB board, at yesterday's meeting, and bequests received from this point forward will be used to make sure adequate reserves are in place to cover annual operating expenses, and then the residual assets will be added to ACB's legacy endowment fund. Most important, the Legacy Endowment Fund will ensure ACB's financial future and help to perpetuate ACB's important work for many years to come. So congratulations to all of us for this achievement. For those using technology to keep up with information, ACB has continued its efforts with the development of ACB Radio Access on the Amazon Alexa line of virtual assistant devices. Using Amazon Echo devices with Alexa, you can now listen to ACB Radio Mainstream or Treasure Trove. Just say, "Alexa, open ACB Mainstream," or "open ACB Radio Treasure." We are working on bringing ACB Radio Cafe and ACB Radio Interactive into the Alexa line of devices with an enhanced skill later this year. I wonder how many Alexa devices out there in Radio Land I just turned on. My thanks to Jeff Bishop for his continued leadership and his vision of what ACB Radio can be and where it can go in the future. Thank you, Jeff. As I mentioned earlier, we never know what curveballs life will toss our way. In mid-April, I lost my beloved seeing eye dog, Dolly, to a cancerous tumor pressing on her spinal column that was inoperable. It was incredibly sudden and devastating. I had resigned myself to being at this last convention as ACB president using my cane, which for me is a pretty slow process. I had hoped to finish my term as president with Dolly by my side, since she had been with me through nearly the entire run, but that wasn't meant to be. So I did what all of us who have to go through the dog replacement process do. I completed the paperwork. I faxed off the forms on May 1st and settled in for a long wait. On May 4th, I received a call from the Seeing Eye while I was attending a BANA meeting in Toronto, the Braille Authority of North America. I was certain I must have made some dreadful error on my paperwork. They asked me if I might be able to come in for training on May 6th, 2 days later, to train with a new dog. I was stunned, but it didn't take long to say yes. So I spent a couple of weeks in Morristown, New Jersey, training with my new seeing eye dog, Ida Belle. Yes, Ida Belle Charlson, a nice southern name for a good little Yankee dog up in Boston. She's a 2.5-year-old female German Shepherd, and she is working out great. And if you all see us zipping down the halls this week, please say hi. With Ida Belle by my side, I will finish up what has been a great experience leading a wonderful organization. I will start the next chapter in my service to ACB. I'm not sure quite yet what direction that will be, but I have a few ideas, and I'm excited to continue work for ACB moving into the future. In closing, my thanks to all of the volunteers working with ACB. Last year, our volunteers contributed 18,502 hours of their time and effort to our organization, which is up over 2,000 hours from the previous year. That is an amazing accomplishment. My thanks to ACB committee chairs, ACB committee members, and others for all the hard work you do in making this organization the best it can be in serving people who are blind throughout the country. My thanks also to this year's convention committee, all of the volunteers who come and help us every year, and everyone who has worked to make this convention all that I know it will be, one of our most successful conventions ever. The American Council of the Blind and our thousands of members continue to have much to be proud of. And our affiliates and chapters all across this country are making a difference in so many ways. Our work continues to be important, and our advocacy continues to be our strength. I am looking forward to supporting our new president and the new team of officers that will lead ACB into the future. I want to help with membership initiatives, implementing our vision for the future, and promoting ACB's core values throughout our organization. We will continue to have victories on key issues, battles when we need to fight for our civil rights, and partnering with industry to make opportunities for inclusion a reality rather than a dream. I plan to be there for all of you working hard to make all of those dreams a reality for all of us. Thank you for the opportunity you've given me to lead ACB for the last 6 years. It was an honor I will always treasure. Thank you so much.
That was Kim Charlson giving her final president's report at the opening session of the American Council of the Blind Annual Conference and Convention in Rochester, New York, on July 6th of this year. As most of you know, ACB held elections for officers this year, and one result of that is that we have a new president, Dan Spoon, who was voted in by acclamation. He joins us now to tell us what he sees in store for ACB. Good evening, Dan. Welcome to Council Connection. Congratulations on being ACB's latest or most recent president.
Well, thank you, Steve. I really appreciate it. It's been quite an honor, and in a whirlwind here over the past 2 or 3 weeks,
we've had lots of
activities going on.
So, tell us a little bit about you. You weren't always involved in the blindness field, I don't think.
No, I have retinitis pigmentosis, so it's one of those eye disease that progressively gets worse as you age. It's a degenerative eye condition, eye disease. So, I would say I first got involved really at the local level back in the mid to late 80s. At that point in time, I was in my, mid-20s, mid to late 20s, and we were doing a little beat baseball. And so I went and talked to our local chapter of the American Council of Blind, which was called the Mid-Florida Council of the Blind, and ask if they would kind of sponsor us and, help us buy some beat baseballs and those type of things. And they gave me a donation of $100 and, wished me well. And so that was kind of my first introduction to anything associated with the American Council of Blind. Didn't even know it was associated, at that point in time. It was just a local chapter.
You were just kind of doing your own thing.
I was doing my own thing, right. And then when I got into my 30s, I got a job working for Siemens Energy. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, got put on the State of Florida Rehab Council as a business representative.
Okay.
And there I met a woman named Teresa Blessings, who at that point in time was the president of the Florida Council of the Blind, and she encouraged me to get involved with, you know, the Florida Council of the Blind, and actually talked me into running for membership secretary. And kind of my first meeting in Florida Council of the Blind, I was actually became an officer, which was really unusual, and did that for, I think it was either 4 or 6 years. I was our membership secretary, and then kind of took on a little more responsibility at the state and local level, and was the president of my local chapter, I think, in 99-2000, and was the treasurer for the long time. And you know, I really didn't get introduced at the national level to American Council of the Blind until 2009, when the ACB convention was in Orlando at the Rosen Center.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so... Mm-hmm. I always, Leslie and I kind of laugh that you know, we ACB came to us, you know, rather than go to ACB in a little bit, but it was in Orlando, so we went with her sister Anita and just had an outstanding time, met lots of great people, and part of that was we bid on a auction package to go visit Nashville, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, hosted by Dan and Brenda Dillon.
Of course.
And we went up there and did the Grand Ole Opry and, you know, and actually took my dad with us because he played football at the University of Tennessee. So he's a big Tennessee fan.
Mm-hmm.
And we met Brenda and Dan. They invited us over to their house for dinner. And, you know, if you've ever been around Brenda and Dan, by the time the evening was over, they had recruited us, Leslie, to be on the auction committee and me to be on the resource development committee. So it kind of started from there and then eventually ran for the board in 2012 in Louisville and had the opportunity to be first vice president here the last 2 years. So I, compared to a lot of people, I really have a fairly short tenure inside of ACB at the national level.
Well, but it also sounds like you have a very active tenure involved in a lot of things. But you also, it seems to me, bring to the table a lot of experiences outside of the blindness community. Your work with Siemens and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's a perspective that we sometimes don't get.
Yeah, and I'm hoping I can bring that, hopefully that skill to the table to help ACB in any way that I can. I had the opportunity through my career at Siemens to, you know, start out as an IT programmer and then eventually work my way into being a second-level manager that was responsible for different business process reengineering projects. And so spent a lot of time doing project management and, you know, working with people to try to get things done, and kind of like ACB a little bit in a world where, you know, for other people, it's maybe not their top priority, but for you as the project manager, you have to kind of work at pulling teammates together to kind of work on getting something done in a, you know, in a scheduled time with a certain amount of budget. You know, trying to, you know, really do something to significantly change the organization. So I think that, you know, ACB does, you know, so many wonderful things, but we do use, we have a small staff, so we have to do a lot with volunteers. You know, we're a membership-driven organization.
Oh, yeah.
And so how do you get the most out of your membership and have everybody work and play well together? This is part of our challenge.
And that has certainly been a challenge, I think, for us from time to time in ACB. I know it is at the local level sometimes, and it gets worse as you go further up the chain.
Yeah, yeah. And we really have had a lot of, you know, opportunity to, you know, participate at the local level and the state level, which I think is also really valuable. You know, ACB, a little, you know, some things happen at the national level, but, you know, a lot of things happen at the grassroots level, you know, and that's where a lot of advocacy or community involvement. It really does happen at the local level.
Well, and that's really where it starts, as illustrated by your own path into the organization. I mean, you didn't start out nationally. You were doing things locally first.
Oh, yeah. And really, you know, where Leslie and I got involved, we were trying to, you know, find somebody that was going through what we were going through. It really wasn't, we didn't start out with, you know, huge advocacy.
Oh, no.
Aspirations. It was really about, gosh, you know, we're losing our vision. We're having trouble, you know, using the computer, you know, functioning at restaurants or grocery stores. You know, how do other people go through this? And so it's, was invaluable just to have those friends and colleagues at the local level that
sure.
could share your experiences and kind of help you along the journey that you were on. And so I think that's the biggest value that ACB brings, is we're members who are supportive of each other and, really can, I think, make a huge difference, especially for somebody that's newly blind and going through it for the first time.
And that's a big area of importance, because really, as much as we like to think, or at least I've often thought of us as, you know, ACB being people who have been blind all their lives, the truth of it is that for most people, blindness is kind of a new thing in their lives, and they're trying to get used to a lot of things in a very short time.
Yeah, it's true. And it's amazing the impact you can have on your community just being out there every day and living your daily life and, you know, going to the cleaners for your clothes and going to the grocery store and
yep.
going to restaurants or ball games or, you know, your local sports bar to have a drink on Friday night. You know,
it's, that's right.
That's where you can really have a tremendous impact, I think.
Well, that's when people get to know you as the individual you are rather than the blind person who they see at a distance walking around with a cane or dog.
Oh, yeah. Leslie and I have a story we like to tell. We know there's a local sports bar that's in our shopping center about half mile up away, so we can easily walk to it. And, we first got involved, you know, playing like their fantasy sports teams, you know, like fantasy baseball and fantasy football. And the first time we wanted to kind of join the fantasy baseball team, they were like, you know, and do a draft. They were like, well, you're blind. You're going to have a hard time drafting. You won't be able to know the players
yep.
and all this stuff. And I was like, well, we're pretty good at sports. Just give us a chance. And so the funny thing is, so we try to come up with a clever name for our team. So we called ourselves the Blind Bats.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny. So now it's been 20 years that we've been going to this sports bar. Well, you know, we've won the championship several times now. So people
wow.
are not feeling sorry for us
not
anymore, right?
No.
You know, we walked away with the money.
Mm-hmm.
And so now when we walk into the, you know, to the sports bar, they'll say, you know, here come the Blind Bats, or,
right.
you know, and,
right.
And so we had a new waitress the other day, and she said, oh, that is so cruel. I can't believe they call you all the Blind Bats. And they said, no, that's the sign of respect. That's our fantasy baseball team name. Don't feel bad about us. So
well,
they're,
yeah,
they're,
you guys made that up, so there's no cruelty involved.
That's right. And so she said, oh, okay, I thought they were making fun of you. I said, oh, no. We've known these guys for years.
Yep.
And so, so now we're, you know, there's no quarter given. We're out there, you know, fighting with them, you know, tooth
right.
and nail every year.
Yep. Give
but
and take.
Isn't that where you want to be?
Yep.
You know, where you're just accepted as part of the community. Yeah.
Yep. Well, tell me, what do you see your things going forward, or is it too early to tell for you at this point?
Well, sure. Well, you know, you're kind of like drinking through a fire hose, you know. And
so, yes.
First of all, I just want to, you know, shout out to Kim Charlson. What a tremendous job she did as our president for the last 6 years and through her administration. I think she worked really hard to have a very collaborative, congenial board that really got along well together
mm-hmm.
with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what I'd like to do in our administration is just kind of build on what, you know, Kim has already been able to accomplish. You know, we've got a we've now got a very dynamic executive director in Eric Bridges. We've got a lot of good young staff members with a lot of energy. And we've, gotten to a point where we have, financial stability. We've formed an endowment, a legacy endowment fund, where we're, hopefully going to grow some money for the future, where we can, have that endowment generate a reoccurring income stream for us. So things are good in ACV right now. I think the next step that we've been working on is trying to kind of, we have lots of committees, as you're aware of, in all kinds of different areas. And I think the next step we'd like to take is to kind of think of the ACB organization. It's a non-for-profit business, and we kind of need to run it with our key programs and services. So we've been working as a board and as a leadership team to kind of take all of this and boil it down into really nine key programs and services. And those are, starting at the top, our convention, which of course is a huge undertaking that we do every year. And then of course our advocacy work. That's a big program that we spend a lot of energy and staff time on and volunteers. Membership services, we've got to really work at stabilizing our affiliates in many cases, helping them where they need help. And then starting to really grow our membership. Our membership has been declining a little bit each of the last 5-plus years. And so we need to turn that trend around and really start increasing our membership and providing better membership services. And then we have really the area we were talking about earlier, information and referral and peer support. And we have a lot of committees that kind of focus on that, and special interest affiliates, so things like the Sight and Sound Impaired Committee, SASE, Women's Concerns, Next Generation, affiliates like Guide Dog Users and Ham Radio Operators and, gosh, it just goes on and on, Low Vision, CCLVI. There's so many different peer support services that we offer folks. We need to think of those kind of holistically, of all the different support services we provide individuals that are blind and visually impaired. And then, of course, we have our scholarship program, and that's really grown. We've got one gentleman, Ross Pangier, that now gives three $7,500 scholarships each year, which is fantastic. So, and we overall, I think, have 17 scholarships, so scholarships and awards. DKM this year with the J.P. Morgan Chase Leadership Awards, we had, I believe, 49 people apply for those. So, really a lot of interest in the DKM program. So we've got scholarships and awards. Then we've got our audio description project, which has really had some exciting advancements here over the next few years with the leadership of Joel Snyder and Kim and all of our, all of our kind of steering committee with audio description.
Sure.
So that's got, a lot more legs on it. We were going to have a meeting with the 9/11 Museum here just in 2 weeks to work on audio description and accessibility for that key museum. And then, of course, public awareness is a big program of us to get the word out and help. Sometimes I think ACB is the best kept secret in the country. So in
it seems that way sometimes, doesn't it?
We do a lot of great stuff, but we're not real good about bragging about ourselves and branding ourselves. So we've got to do some work in public awareness.
And that's a hugely important thing in today's world, where everybody trumpets their accomplishments to the skies. And if you don't, you just get lost in the noise.
Yeah. So we really have an opportunity there. We've got our first podcast going now with ACB Advocacy Update, and that's getting a lot of good traction. Kelly Gask and Katie Frederick and John McCann and others have done a great job with our social media, and that continues to grow. We've got now a world-class website with ACB.org and the refresh of that. So we've got some good building blocks, but there's still a need to really kind of take public awareness to the next level.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we've got our administration, and then last but not least is our whole financials and being able to do fundraising and get the resources we need for the organization.
And of course, without the money, none of the rest of it works.
That's right. You've got to have members, and members drive resources, both, you know, time, whatever they call it, time, talent, and treasure, you know? And mm-hmm. so the more you can get people involved, the more it kind of all builds on itself. So what I'd like to see us do is kind of run the organization through these 9 programs. And if mm-hmm. you think about it, our committees all line up very well underneath those programs. So if we talk about advocacy, we've obviously got, you know, we've got an advocacy committee, but then we have environmental access and transportation and rehabilitation task force, you know, special education, schools for the blind. So, I mean, we've got all these wonderful advocacy committees, and at times I think we get kind of out of sync between what the committees are doing and what our staff's doing. And so I think if we kind of look at running our organization at this program level, then we'll have the ability to really kind of set a set of agreed to goals and objectives in each program area, and then have the staff and our volunteers through all our committees all working on things kind of in collaboration. And, mm-hmm. and I think that'll help our communications, help our committees know what they need to get done. And I think, you know, just give us a really good way to communicate back and forth with each other.
Is there anything that you'd like to say at this point to people on the local level?
Well, first of all, just, you know, shouts out and thanks to Bay State Council and all the great work that you all do and all the work at the local chapter level. I would say encourage you, how can you double your membership in your local chapter? What are those things you could do to get more people involved of all different ages? You know, students, next generation level, you know, that are at that working age, retirees, folks that are experiencing blindness for the first time. How can we get more people involved in ACB? And it starts at the local chapter level. So, you know, bring a friend to the next meeting. Find out, you know, encourage others to get involved. I would love to see the membership in Bay State Council double by the time we're talking 2 years from now, Steve. That would be a huge, tremendous accomplishment.
It certainly would. Well, Dan, I want to thank you for joining me tonight. I wish you the best of success in your road through the presidency. I think you got a lot of work ahead of you, as I'm sure you know, probably better even than we do. But I think it's great that you're here, and I'm expecting great things from you. No pressure or anything, but just I think you're going to do a fantastic job for us.
Oh, well, I appreciate the kind words, Steve. And I always think about ACB, it's not a revolution, it's an evolution, right? So you have to slowly grow and make sure we always remember our history and what has been accomplished before we were in a position of leadership, but also how can we challenge the organization to move forward. So thank you for your time, and shout out to everybody in Massachusetts.
I will do that, Dan, and thank you once again for being with us. It's great to talk to you tonight.
All right. Thanks so much. Have a good evening.
You too. You're listening to Council Connection. The show airs on the first Thursday of every month on the Talking Information Center Network at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern, and on the second Tuesday of the month on ACB Radio Mainstream at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can also hear us on the BSCB Fillmore box at 773-572-6312 or by visiting the Council Connection archives at www.acbofma.org. On June 21st of this year, BSCB held its first ever Story Slam at the Carroll Center in Newton. 15 people stepped up to the mic to tell their stories, which ranged from the very funny to the very personal to the very quirky. And we started things off with Lee Barrier telling us about her experience working in summer camp.
I suppose the first thing I need to tell you to put this story in context is that I'm a city girl. And back many years ago, this was the summer after my first husband had passed. So I was not working at the time because I had been a stay-at-home mom and was caring for him before he passed and hadn't found a full-time job yet. And my brother calls me up. Now, he'd been about 5 or 6 years working for a group of camps, summer camps. Some of them were day camps. Some of them were overnight camps. And in a panic, he said to me, "Can you help me out? Our cook just quit." Okay. So off I go. It took me a day or two to put everything, you know, in order because I was going to be there for 30 days. It was pretty much going to be the month of August up in Ashby, Massachusetts. I didn't even know where Ashby, Massachusetts was. But I found it and I arrived. And they gave me a tour of this very large property. And they showed me the great hall and the kitchen in back. And there was a little cottage behind that was one of the next buildings where I got to stay for the next 30 days. And it happened to be the last day of a session was like day 10, and they shipped everybody home. And the buses picked up the next group of campers to come up to camp, and supper time was day 1. So it all kind of rotated right into one from the other. The first couple of nights were a little scary. I did have staff. I walked into the kitchen. I recognized probably 2 pieces of equipment. Now, I had food service history. In fact, I was amazed because I had probably a 15-year resume in food service, but it had been mostly waitressing and some food prep, but not on this scale. I was now responsible for feeding about 100 people. There were about 60 campers plus staff. 3 meals a day, and an evening snack. Okay, I arrived in the craziness and the height of dinner that was being managed. And we got through the first night. I got settled in and walked into the kitchen the next morning. The camp lady, the director of the camp, comes and tells me the last order for the season has already been made. You're going to have to make do, because they have no budget left for ordering. Okay. I have many, many recipes for do. If you ever need one, let me know. So we settle in, and things are rolling along, and we get a couple of weeks in, and I decided I had enough eggs. I was going to make scrambled eggs for breakfast. Now, we have a 6-burner stove, and one of those pans that sits 2 burners back, about 4 to 6 inches high, very nicely. And these are eggs. These aren't egg beaters. You don't pour them out of a carton. You actually get up earlier in the morning and allow yourself time to crack all of the eggs, to then add the milk, to then stir them in this giant bowl with this giant whisk and put them on the stove. And we start cooking eggs. And about 3/4 of the way to the correct doneness for scrambled eggs, the stove goes off. So I frantically call the maintenance man. Something's wrong. My stove's not working. Come fix my stove. So bleary-eyed, this fellow walks into my kitchen, pushes a few buttons, takes a look around. Hang on a minute, I'll be right back. And of course, the clock is ticking, and there's no heat. And I'm well on my way to not being able to serve all of my campers scrambled eggs for breakfast. And he walks back into my kitchen and says to me, "Oh, you ran out of gas." Now remember, I'm a city girl. So I look at this kid, I stick my hands on my hips, and I say, "How you run out of gas?" To which he then explains to me, "You see that big tank out beside this kitchen that you've walked by every day you've been here?" "Yeah." "So that holds propane, and it's empty." "Oh." He says, "You know what else that means?" He says the big tank that's at the top of the hill where everybody's up trying to take a shower and get ready for the day, emptied first. So in about 20 minutes, you have 100 people walking through your door for breakfast after having come out of an ice-cold shower. Gee, thanks. So eggs didn't happen, and we scrambled for cereal and milk, and if we had them, Pop-Tarts or whatever we could manage that didn't need heat. Fortunately, it was one of those days where after breakfast, the entire camp was going on some kind of hiking trip and weren't going to be back until dinner. We were making sandwiches. Lunch was already out the door by 10 o'clock in the morning. It was supposed to be the cleaning day for the kitchen and to get everything ready for, you had like one day that you could like strip everything down and clean it all out. So midday, truck pulls up, propane delivery comes. Turns out that the propane company driver had gone on vacation and they forgot to reschedule our delivery. So they refilled us and we were up and running again in time for dinner. And everybody was back into hot water and everyone was back into a hot dinner. And in a day or two, I was able to make it up to everybody because I made them chocolate chip pancakes. So there was a happy ending all around.
Our story slam ended with Jim and Ann Donna recounting their rather unusual vacation in Montreal.
A couple of years after we got married, Ann and I decided to take a vacation in Montreal. As soon as we got to Quebec, we noticed that things changed. Everybody spoke French. At the gas stations, convenience stores, and anywhere we stopped to ask for directions, they spoke French. At the hotel desk, they spoke French. I had a little French in high school, and Anne had some more than I did, but neither of us was fluent in conversational French. We were feeling very disoriented. On the way to our hotel room, I managed to find an English language newspaper, and in our room, I perused it to see if we could find something to do that evening. I found an announcement of a concert by the well-known soprano Maureen Forrester. Even better, the last line in the announcement said, "Translation will be provided." At last, there would be an activity where we would understand what was going on. The hotel thoughtfully provided a tourist map. We found our hotel and the concert hall on the map, and lo and behold, they were only 8 blocks from each other. It would be easy to walk to the concert.
That's what we thought.
We also found a restaurant a few blocks from the concert hall, and it looked like it would be a fun and easy night. So we set out from the hotel, and we found some street names that were not on the map. It was several blocks before we came to a street that was on the map. We soon came to realize that the tourist map showed only the major streets of Montreal, and that most of the smaller streets weren't on it. But we were committed to our evening out, and so we continued on to the concert hall, which turned out to actually be 25 blocks from the hotel. It was a long walk.
Every time I asked Jim how long it would be, he would say, "Just 8 more blocks."
We settled into our seats for the concert, and I looked over the program. It was a concert of Brahms songs. Words were provided in German, and I looked through the program for the promised translation. Soon I found the translation, and it turned out to be a translation into French. What the newspaper announcement had not said was that the translation was from German into French. I half groaned and half smiled, but we enjoyed the concert very much. Halfway through the concerts, the lights went out, and we were left in the dark, except for a few emergency lights. Soon there was an announcement over the public address system in French. Someone sitting next to us was nice enough to translate. The power had failed, and they were going to finish the concert by candlelight. They did, and it was wonderful. After the concert, we made what we knew would be a longer-than-expected trek to the restaurant, but we were hungry and determined. The restaurant turned out to be a little fancier than I expected, and they required men to wear dinner coats. They were happy to lend me a coat about two sizes too big. There were musicians who strolled from table to table. They sat us at a table with a lighted candle in the middle between us and handed us a menu in French. I was embarrassed by my poor French pronunciation, and so I didn't want to read it very loudly. Anne had to lean in to hear me. She got too close to the candle, and her hair caught on fire. I quickly realized the real purpose of the coat they had given me, to put out the fire. I took it off and smothered the fire with it. Fortunately, Anne's hair had only been slightly singed, and there was no harm done except worry and excitement. The head waiter, or
the maitre d', or one of those two people, came over afterwards and said to me, Madame, are you correct?
Meaning, are you all right? His English was as bad as our French. So. As we ate, the strolling musicians came by our table playing a tune. As we listened, we realized they were playing, "You Light Up My Life." We figured out how to use the Montreal Metro and took it back to the hotel. After Anne combed out the last of the singed hair, we went to bed thinking, good night, sweet dreams, bonsoir, fait de beau rêve. And that was our trip to Montreal.
You can hear more stories on our website, www.acbofma.org. Just look for the link that says BSCB Story Slam. Well, that'll do it for this month on Council Connection. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please be sure to leave us a message in the BSCB Fillmore box at 773-572-6312. I'm your host, Steve Dresser, wishing you a happy summer and inviting you to join us again in September when we'll be back with another edition of Council Connection. Take care.